Hello and welcome to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we talk about things that tend to chill us a little and thrill us a little. Welcome to the month of Spooky 2018. Scary stories are a part of our lives. The most popular of these of late ranges from The Walking Dead to losing 5 years in a jet airliner. These things remind us of our own mortality, get our adrenaline going, and send chills through our bodies that we just can't explain. During this month, you can expect the unexpected. Hear the unbelievable and witness stories that stretch the imagination. On today's program, we have a black-eyed kid story from Texas. I'll tell you a bit about what is coming this month, and then we'll hear about an 18-year-old boy who died on the old Santee M wagon road. I will play my favorite tale from the coffers of old-time radio, and we end on a happy note with Growing Up by Tom Williams. Now, we'll begin it all with this very special 5-minute mystery.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Melody Goodman. Melody lives in the great state of Texas and has done more for this mystery than any of you could ever know. How do I know that? Well, because I've already heard the story.
Hello. Yes, this is Dr. Fangfist. No, I didn't know it was Halloween. What do you mean, surprise?
And that's all I know, Detective, except that before he died, he told me a story that he received from Melody Goodman in Laredo, Texas.
Hello, Ron. I got your request from the podcast that you needed a scary story. I have one and almost hate to tell it. Every time I do, I can still feel the fear. It was a late night and I was out driving home from a friend's house. I hate to admit that I had a bit too much and probably shouldn't have been driving at all. I was, but I'll never do it again because in this case, it turned out to be a very bad decision. It was about a 10-mile drive home, and along the way I saw a young boy on the side of the road looking for a ride. I thought to myself, why not? And I pulled over and picked the kid up. He came around to the window of the car, and it was then I felt absolute fear. He spoke in a voice that I will never forget.
Can I get in the car?
I said as brightly as I could, well, that's why I stopped. Do you need a ride somewhere? He said,
no, I just want to get into the car.
It was then that I looked up at him. His eyes were as black as night, no other way to describe them. It makes sense that they would be wide, but these eyes were as black could be. I felt like he could stare right through me rather than at me. I was terrified, and I immediately regretted having agreed to let him get into the car. It was then he asked me again if he could get in. This time I said, on second thought, I've got to go. I don't have time right now to take you anywhere. Can I make a phone call for you? The boy looked down at me and said,
can I get into the car? Please?
It was then I gunned the engine and cut the heck out of there. I was now completely sober and realized the folly of what I had done. I guess it was an adrenaline rush that had saved me. From what? I'll never know. As I looked back in the rearview mirror, I saw the little boy standing there with his thumb out, waiting for his next victim.
And that was it, Detective. That's all he said.
Well, there you have a mystery that really doesn't have any solution other than it's scary as heck. I hate black-eyed kids' stories, but I love to hear them. I guess that's a personal problem, and I may not be able to fix it. However, this 5-Minute Mystery was brought to you by Melody Goodman from Laredo, Texas.
What's that you say?
Welcome to the 8th annual Month of Spooky. We're going to have a whole lot of fun this year, and when it's all said and done, I think you're going to have to agree. Sylvia Schultz is back for Volume 5 of Ghost Stories with Sylvia. Jim Harold returns for the 8th year to talk about all things creepy in old-time horror with Jim Harold. We have newcomer Shuler Johnson visiting to tell us about ghost hunting and his group, the Paranormal Investigations and Observations team. You might remember they sent in a story a few weeks back. Add to it all the stories that you have sent in, and I think you see why we're in for a trick-or-treat or two this year. Sorry for the pun. I want to thank all of you who that sent in stories this year. It is our best showing yet. Thank you for everything you do for the podcast and these amazing stories. Now, I received this note from Joelle. I'm so tired of hearing anything you can do. As soon as it starts, I turn RAS off. Typically, I love your show, but I found the story and the reading to be most tedious and monotone. I can't wait for it to end. Well, Joelle, you're actually the first that said that they didn't care for anything you can do. I have made the commitment to complete the book, so we're gonna do that. There are 7 chapters to go, and I can guarantee it's gonna get pretty exciting. The big fight starts soon between Bart and the Knipe, and I highly recommend the end of this novel. Now, I will say that we'll not be playing any new chapters of Anything You Can Do this month because of the month of spooky content. Anything You Can Do will return in November and will finish the story of Bart and his battle with the space alien. Thank you, Joelle, for your comment. I really do appreciate it. And yes, I do mean that. Now, having said all of that, for those of you who can't wait for more of the novel, I will be updating the Anything You Can Do homepage each week with new chapters introduced by Mark Nelson himself. Also, after we finish the book on the podcast, Mark will be coming on the show to talk with me about it, and I gotta say, I'm excited about that. That's gonna be a whole lot of fun. I will have a link to the Anything You Can Do homepage in the show notes. And now, these are your stories.
These are your stories, sent by you, for you.
Our story for this week comes from Joe Garza from Scottsburg, Oregon. We've had a lot of stories on the show, but this one by far grabs the title Unique. It is the perfect story to tell in the month of spooky, and also happens to be from my backyard. Well, That is if my backyard was 198 miles long, that is. Here is George's story. My story is true. I know that when people hear it, they'll think I made the whole thing up. That used to bother me, but these days I live with it. It does not stop me from telling it every chance I get. Someday it's my hope that someone will believe me. I want to thank Ron for this opportunity to share to the biggest audience yet. It happened in 1993 when I was 10 years old. My father and I went camping. The original plan for the summer was to have the whole family there. My little sister had other ideas and was born an entire month early. I was heartbroken that we would have to cancel the trip, but then my mom decided that we should go. The baby was healthy and Dad could use the break. Also, I heard later that the reservation was not refundable. So it was that we too would go for the whole family. We were going to Cascadia State Park, which is located on the site of one of Western Oregon's early mountain retreats. Cascadia is a little-known state park gem in the Cascade foothills, 14 miles east of Sweet Home. The Giesendorfer Hotel, with tennis courts, croquet, and bowling, has long since disappeared, but the feel of the century-old leisure lifestyle of visitors coming to drink the natural mineral waters lingers. The place is alive with history, from the ancient rock art in Cascadia Cave to the very ruts of the old Santiam wagon road. It was while visiting this old trail our story happened. To this day, my dad will not talk about the event that occurred that day, but at least he does not deny what happened. We are at the point on the trail called Tombstone Pass. It's the beginning of a treacherous 7-mile hill for westbound travelers. It got its name from a family tragedy in 1871. While stopping overnight to camp with his family, 18-year-old James McKnight was accidentally shot as he retrieved his gun from between two bedrolls. His grieving mother placed a tombstone in his honor. That gravestone is still there today. It was getting late in the evening when my dad and I decided that we'd unpack our dinner that we'd hiked with us. My dad built us a small fire, which to this day I'm not sure he was supposed to do, but he did, and we heated up franks and beans, a real Westerner's dinner to be sure. We were laughing and having a good time around the fire. We were thinking about Mom and the new baby sister. When suddenly a man came up to the camp. Well, boy would be a description, but to me he looked like a man. I estimated he was around 18 years old. He asked if we had any extra grub and that he would chop or do whatever he had to earn his keep. My dad, being the cool guy, joked with him for a minute about chopping down one of the nearby trees, and the boy just smiled. My dad told him to have a seat and pointed at the food. It was then I noticed for the first time that I could see through the boy. I wondered why my dad hadn't said anything. He looked strange, like he was there, but not all there. He was dressed like he was some sort of reenactment character from the 1800s. My suspicions were confirmed about his non-solid nature when the boy walked into the fire and passed through the other side without disturbing it or being burned. Both my dad and I looked at each other in dismay and disbelief. Then the boy tried to say something, but after a few more seconds, he simply faded out and was gone. We were never scared. We never felt in danger. After the event, all we could do was make sure we both had seen what we had seen. We, of course, told Mom about it when we got home. She was quite polite, but she never did believe us. My sister, who is in her 20s now, believes the story, and I think my wife believes me, but I can't be sure. Was it the ghost of James McKnight? Can't be sure of that either. But we were only about a half a mile from his final resting place. George Garza from Scottsburg, Oregon. What a great story, George. I did a bit of research and found the name James McKnight in the census records of the Parma Township, Cuyahoga County, Ohio. That's where he was born. The family left there to come west, so the story is actually history. The timing is a bit off and had him listed at 20 at the time of his death and not 18. The Santee M Wagon Trail holds an interesting and unique place in Oregon's history. Unlike other wagon roads that were built to bring settlers to the Willamette Valley, this road was designed to lead settlers and their livestock eastward to the rich pasture lands of central Oregon and Idaho. How about that? I want to thank you for your story, George. I can honestly say I've never heard one like this before, and I believe you. If you want to put your story into Ron's Amazing Stories just like George did, all you got to do is head to the main website, click on the story submission page, and just start typing away. We want to hear your stories, and we especially love the scary ones. And now, this. Well, here we are in the month of Spooky. One of the traditions here at the podcast since 2011 is that we play one of my favorite old-time radio shows. It's listed as one of the scariest ever and places at number 20 on the top 30 list. By today's standards, it's probably quite tame, but if you go back to 1948, not so much. You have to remember that television was in its infancy back then, and people just had their radios for daily entertainment. If you listen to that with that frame of mind, well, you can conjure some pretty amazing things in your head. The story is called The Thing on the Forble Board, and it's part of the Quiet Please anthology series. It first aired on August 9th, 1948.
The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Quiet Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet Please for tonight is called The Thing on the Forble Board. Me, I'm a roughneck. Well, I was a roughneck, 20 years ago. A little too old, too slow now. Besides, I got a dollar now. I don't have to be a roughneck, you see. Married, got a nice home. Had to meet my wife. Hey, Mike! Her name's Maxine, but she likes to be called Mike. Mike! I guess she's busy out in the kitchen someplace. Besides, she doesn't hear very well. Shame, too, she's so pretty and everything. Well, you'll meet her. Sit down. I was saying I was a roughneck. Well, no, that doesn't mean exactly what you think it means. A roughneck is an oil field worker, specifically a guy in a drilling crew. Call them roughnecks like you call a section hand on the railroad a gandy dancer, a garage hand a grease monkey. Same time you work around a drilling crew for a while, you're going to be a roughneck in every sense of the word, boy. A derrick floor or a forble board's no place for a guy with a bow tie. Because... yeah, when you have to fool around with drilling holes that go farther down the ground than it is from the top of Pike's Peak down to sea level. Yeah, sure they do. By the time I was a roughneck, we'd got this one well down to 7,313 feet. That was a record. But last May, Pure Oil brought one in out in the Natrona Valley in Wyoming at 14,309 feet. That, friend, is almost 3 miles. Quite a hole, that, huh? Sure, I don't think there's an oil man in the world that don't wonder one time or another what's down there. Besides, rock and oil and gas. Oil that's made out of trees that died 20 million years ago. Oil that's made out of dinosaur bones. Oil that's maybe made out of the flesh and blood of men, maybe, that beat each other to death with a stone axe. Ate saber-toothed tiger for lunch. Yeah, you get to wondering. You look at the cores that come up from way down there, and sometimes the little shells, trilobites mostly, that was alive when Manhattan Island, where New York is, was under half a mile of ice. We found something once, me and Billy Grunewald, and something found us. I'll tell you about it. We were down to around 5,400 feet. We'd set casing. We began to get water, so we hadn't stopped drilling and cement off. Well, you see, when water begins to seep in the hole, you pull your drill pipe, then you let down a cementing shoe inside the casing, and you plug up the bottom of the hole, casing and all, with quick-hardening waterproof cement. Then when it's hard, you drill through the cement, go on down, and the cement outside the casing at the bottom keeps the water out. Well, we had the drill pipe all pulled and cracked. The cement was setting, see? So we was shut down, waiting for it to harden. We'd been coring just before. Well, you see, a core drill is hollow. And as the bit digs down, it stuffs the drillings up inside it, so when you pull it out, you got a sample of the kind of stuff you're going through. And a geologist can tell a lot from that. So there's nobody around the rig except me that night. The rest of the crew's gone into town. I was toasting some pork chops over the forge for myself, but I heard a car pulling up. Look out, it's Billy Grunewald, the geologist, and I give him a hello. Hi, Billy, come and have a pork chop.
Hi, Porky. Where's everybody?
They all went to town. I'm the whole crew.
You know, I had three blowouts between here and Oxnard.
Yeah, I wondered where you was. Ted said you'd be in here about three.
Yeah, I would have been, except for my tough luck. Oh, boy, I'm dead.
Yeah, hungry?
Starved.
Yeah, I got seven pork chops. And bread. And some coffee, kind of.
Swell. Hey, I got a bottle in the car.
We're going to have a banquet.
Hey, where's that core? That's what I came up here to look at.
Yeah, back there on the bench. Look at it after supper.
Hey.
What?
Didn't you say you were all alone here? I thought I heard somebody talking.
Mm. I don't see anybody. Keep an eye on that pork chop. You won't have any supper.
Yeah, I'm watching it.
Here, let me put the coffee on. Like so.
When'd you finish cementing?
This morning. Last tower only made about 10 feet of hole, so Ted shut down before we get flooded out of house and home.
Funny about that water.
How?
Oughtn't to be any at that level, according to my figuring.
Well, there is.
Is it salt?
Sure, right out of the bottom of the ocean.
That's funny. Well, maybe I'll be able to tell something from the core. Yeah, I hope so. Well, last core I looked at, I'd have sworn we were getting into shale.
Ain't seen none yet, from the cuttings.
That's funny.
Here, your pork chop's done. Yeah, take some bread.
Yeah, thanks. Oh, man.
Good, huh? Yeah, put on another. I had two already before you come.
Yeah, much obliged. Yeah, you know, you never can tell what's down there. You get it all mapped and plotted out, all the strata. And all you know is what comes out of the hole.
Yeah, I'd like to go down there sometime if I was little enough.
Never get you down a hole.
Yeah, you'd fit. You're skinny.
I'll stay up here and look at the cores, bud. Where is that one?
Behind you. Over there.
Well, I'll have a look at it.
Why don't you wait till you finish your supper?
I'm just going to look at it. Put on another pork chop for me.
Okay.
Well, I wish those screech owls would keep...
What's the matter?
Hey, wait a minute, Porky.
Well, why did...
Listen.
What's eating you?
You know, I'd have sworn there's somebody up there in that forble board.
Ah, you're crazy. There's nobody up there.
Getting against those stands of drill pipe.
Ah, they're just rack crooked. One of them slipped. Come on back and eat your pork chop.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Only I...
What you so jittery about, Billy? Come on, eat your sandwich. Here.
Yeah, well, thanks, Porky. I don't know. I'm just naturally that way, I guess. I'm always scared of the dark.
I'm scared.
Doggone it, I hate to be a baby, but I can't help it.
Scared of the dark? Honest?
Stupid, ain't it?
Oh, I don't know. Everybody's scared of something. Me, Spiders scare the tar out of me. Black widows.
Oh.
I know how you feel, Billy.
There another light over here?
Yeah. Here.
Ah. Oh. That's better. Hey, listen, Porky. Go out to the car and look in the left-hand door pocket and bring back that bottle, will you? That's what I need.
Okay, kid. Okay. So I picked up a flashlight. I turned around and went outside. I found the car. And I got the bottle. And the floor of the derrick was all lit up. And when I saw a beam of light suddenly flash up toward the foible board, I laughed. Billy Grunewald and his ideas. Sure, I looked up. There wasn't a darn thing up there, except the drill pipe racked against the fingerboard. Oh, this, foible board. Well, you've seen oil derricks, or pictures of them? Do you know that little platform that runs around the outside of the derrick about halfway up? Well, that's the foible board. Well, you see, drill pipe comes in lengths, and you handle them with several lengths screwed together so as to save time getting them in and out of the hole. Two lengths is a double, three is a thribble, four is a foible. When you pull a pipe, you hoist it up inside the derrick with a traveling block, which moves up and down from the crown block at the top of the derrick. And then when a foible of pipe is pulled out, it's held in the rotary table. You break the joint with tongs, like a great big Stilson wrench, you see. Snub a cable that's fastened to the handle over the cat head on the draw works, and that breaks the joint. Then you hold the tongs on the pipe, give the rotary table a few turns to unscrew it. You hoist away with the traveling block and swing it over against the fingerboard, lean it against the derrick. The guy up on the foible board takes off the traveling block. You do it all over again till you got all the pipe out, you see? Well, there wasn't anybody up on the foible board except a screech owl, and it flew away. So Billy turned his light off, and I come on inside. And just as I come up the steps, he let out a yell.
Yay!
What's the matter? What's the matter, Billy?
Hey, come here. Look here.
Well, what's it?
Look, Porky.
My... Where did you find that?
Now, listen, Porky, I give you my word. That was embedded in the core.
Why, it couldn't be.
I tell you, it was. Look where I dug it out. Hey, you know what? That rock there comes from a mile underground. And it's been a mile underground for a million years. And look at this.
And I did look. And what he was holding was a gold ring. And it was all carved and filigreed just like jewelry. And there wasn't any kidding about it. It was real. No, wait a minute. Hang on, I ain't done. I poked at the core of rock that looked like a kind of petrified salami or something. And then it was my turn to pretty near jump out of my pants. Because right alongside the place where Billy dug out the ring, there was a mud-covered, but very unmistakable, finger. I picked it up, and it was cold, and it was heavy, and it was solid rock. At least it felt like solid rock. And I looked at Billy, and Billy looked at me. He started to rub the mud off this here stone finger. And as he rubbed it, it began to disappear. No, he could still feel it, he said, but when the mud was gone, neither one of us could see it. And he dropped it to the derrick floor. It went clunk, and we couldn't find it any place. So you know what we done? Well, we took that bottle and we took and finished it, Billy and me. We finished it in one slug of piece, and it was a full pint of bathtub gin. It tasted just like so much well water to me. And then we sat down on the derrick floor and we looked at each other. We didn't say a word. My eyes got heavier and heavier. The last thing I remember was I heard some kind of noise that seemed to be coming up from down on the foible board 80 feet above us. I shut my eyes a minute. I guess I went to sleep. And I had awful dreams. Black widow, spiders crawling all over me with gold rings on their legs.
Things I could hear, but I couldn't see. Up on the floorboard. Billy Grunewald climbing up the ladder outside the derrick in the moonlight. Faces looking at me, and I couldn't figure out who they were. Then I was waked up by a horrible scream. The crash alongside me that shook the whole derrick. I opened my eyes to see Billy Grunewald lying on the floor 2 feet away with a broken neck. With a broken neck and his left hand. Well, he put the gold ring on the little finger of his left hand, and the way his arms were spread out, his left little finger and the ring were gone. Well, friend, I got out of there. I ran down to where Billy had left his car, and I got in. I stepped on the starter. And I couldn't get it to go, and then I remembered after I'm pretty near run down the battery that Billy had taken a key. I wasn't going up there and go through a dead man's clothes to get it. So I sat there in the car and shivered all by myself till daylight. And then Ted and the crew came. Afterwards, a state cop and everybody in the world was asking me questions.
Did you and Billy have a fight, Porky?
I told you we didn't, Ted.
But you had been drinking.
We only had that little pint, Ted.
Well, what was he doing up on the floorboard?
Did you threaten him, and did he run up there to get away from
you? Listen, cop, don't be a chump. Billy Grunewald and I were good friends.
Then why'd you push him off the floorboard?
I didn't, I tell you. I wasn't up there.
Well, what did he go up there for?
I don't know. I was asleep.
How do you know he was up there?
I didn't say he was. You said so. Besides, how would he break his neck if he didn't fall from way up there?
Well, look, officer. I think it was just another accident. I mean, we haven't got anything on Porky, and personally, I don't believe he did it.
Well, it's mighty mysterious.
So it is. But we got work to do. Now, how about it? That cement's hard down there. I want to start drilling again, and I'm short-handed. Will you let Porky stay here till I run in my pipe again? And, well, then you can take him and ask him questions till you're blue in the face.
Well,
okay. Let's get rolling. You got steam up, Happy?
I'm all set.
All right. Porky, you go up on the floorboard.
What? Not me, Ted.
Oh, don't be such a boob. There's nobody up there to shove you overboard. And you can put a safety line around you if you want to. And besides, you're getting paid to do what you're told. I've lost too much time already. Come on, get going.
So, okay, I go up on the floorboard. And you can bet I took a good gander around before I did anything else. Now I couldn't see a thing. So I signaled to the driller to let down the traveling block, and he did. Came sailing down from up above. I was just reaching for it to pick up the first four-bullet drill pipe. Gave a big jerk and the cable broke. It dropped and nearly pulled me off the floorboard. And it landed right on top of Ted. And if you have any idea what a guy looks like after 2 tons of metal land on him from 80 feet up, yeah, you keep your ideas to yourself. That was enough, 2 accidents in a row. The whole crew quit. They wasn't going to wait for a third. And it was Ted's money that was paying off. There wasn't any more, and as far as I know, the abandoned derrick is still there. And that was 20 years ago. Oh, I forgot to tell you something. That traveling block was right in front of my face when it broke loose. It was hanging by steel cable, 3/4-inch steel cable. And I saw that cable break right before my eyes. Looked just like a piece of string when you snap it between your fingers. I could almost see the fingers. And you know what? There was something up there on the floorboard board with me. And so a couple of days later, I came back. I don't know if there's anything in the world as desolate, as dismal, as dead-looking as an abandoned oil well rig. There it stands like a skeleton off on a deserted side road in the bare yellow hills surrounding it, and it's the deadest thing you ever saw. I sat in my car for a long time looking at it. Everything was just the way we'd left it. I looked into the floor. The smashed traveling block was there alongside the rotary table. There was a little mutter of steam from the boiler. That was all. Then I heard a tinkle of something as it hit the ground alongside me. I looked around. There wasn't a soul in sight. But at my feet was the gold ring that Billy Grunewald and I had found in the core of rock that came from a mile underground and from a million years ago in time. And I heard a little sound. The sound of a kid crying. And there wasn't any kid up there. And I heard it again, and it came from above my head, and I took out my revolver. I loaded it carefully. I started up the ladder to the foible board. Well, there wasn't anything up there, nothing I could see. But there was a voice crying. The voice of a little kid. And then there was a movement behind the rack of drill pipes, and I saw the pipe move, and I yelled, "Come out of there, whoever you are! Come out or I'll start shooting!" And the stand of pipe shivered, and I thought, what can it be that can handle that heavy pipe like Jack Straw's? And then there was a crash. The whole stand of pipe fell over, and I just got out of the way in time. And I was alone on the foible board with the thing. But I couldn't see it. I felt the platform tremble under my feet again as something moved toward me. I fired two or three shots. And nothing happened. I started backwards. I knew it was following me because I could hear it meowing like a cat. My feet tripped over something. I saw it was a big can of red lead that somebody had left up there. Without thinking, I picked it up and I threw it at the sound and it splashed. And there it was. And I wish... The face of a little girl, frightened, crying with hunger and terror. Hands like a human being and a finger missing from the left hand. And a body. Well, I'll tell you about that. I told you how I'm scared of spiders. But I knew where it came from. It had come from the bowels of the earth, come riding up on the drill pipe as we yanked it out of the well. Come to an alien world and was lost. It stood there dripping with red paint, blood red from head to foot like some horrible dream. And it put its hand on my arm. Its hand was stone. Living, moving stone. And it looked into my eyes and mewed like a lost kitten. Twenty years ago, I discovered many things about it, what it used for food, that it was deaf, that it was invisible and couldn't see people when it was invisible, that if you sprayed it with mud or paint, or grease paint, makeup, then it could see people. And believe me, I didn't want to see its body. I can see that in my nightmares. But its face, I can't help wanting to see that pathetic little girl face. I'm afraid maybe I've fallen. Ah, but it's very beautiful. And when it's well made up, it's... But making it up, rubbing grease paint on a stone face that looks at you and smiles and it makes sounds like a lost kitten yet. I can disguise the body in long dresses. She can't hear very well. And when she's hungry, I have to stay out of her way. I found out what she likes to eat, remember? No, sit still. Sit still, do. Sit still or I'll have to shoot you. I want you to meet my wife. Or rather, my wife wants to meet you. Mike. Mike. There she is. Come on in, dear. The title of tonight's Quiet Please story is The Thing on the Foible Board,
It was written and directed by Willis Cooper and featured Ernest Chappell. And Dan Sutter played Billy Grunewald. Pat O'Malley was Ted. And Cecil Roy was also a member of the cast. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Sound? Sound by our good friend Albert April. Now, for a word about next week, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
Well, I'm reasonably sure that all the characters in tonight's stories were completely fictional. At least I, for one, hope so. Next week, the story is called Presto Change-O, I'm sure.
And so, until next week at the same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell. This program was heard in Canada through the facilities of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
I love that story. Is it campy at times? Yeah. Is it scary at times? Heck yeah. Is it informational at times? No doubt. But it has that punch that makes you say, wow. Quiet Please wasn't a horror series as much as a series of haunting reflections of our lives. It was the goal of Willis Cooper, the writer and director, to deliver us chills for the ages with an oil rig roughneck who encounters a creature risen from the bowels of the earth. I hope you enjoyed this blast from the past. We will finish our story, Anything You Can Do, after the month of Spooky concludes.
Oz Read By Amazing Stories, read by amazing people.
This time on As Read By, we have another story from the Growing Up Archives of Tom Williams. This one's not scary, but it's a good one. Tom lives in Berlin, Germany, was raised in Alabama, and he has sent in these tales from his youth. This week, Tom tells us about Grandpa's store, popcorn, and corny jokes. In a tale he calls...
Growing up, those southern days. A part of my childhood memories is of living in my grandfather's old general store on the corner of 4th and Engine. The streets have been long since renamed since then. The old general store had not been used as a store in a few decades since great-grandpa was dead and so was his son as a result of being thrown from a wild horse as he was breaking in. It was still a roof over our heads, though in hard times, and directly next door to Grandmother Williams' big house. A number of shade trees were still on the property to help battle the summer heat and also used as part of a playing ground for the grandkids. Grandmother was always the central point of the family. She was the anchor. The house was also typically high off the ground, but we were warned not to go under there because the fear of snakes. To give a little better description of the surrounding area, there was an old turpentine plant across the street, at least what was left of it after one of the hurricanes blew through. Some of the lighter trucks were found in the backwoods a few miles away after the storm, along with a few boats. On the corner across from the old general store where we lived was a lot that I believe to be cursed to this day. As far back as I can remember, anything built on that corner was destined to burn down or go out of business. The first building I remember as a child was a movie house. The neighborhood kids had some place to get out from underneath the adults' feet. Typically, there was a stage in front of the big screen and framed with long satin curtains on each side. And when there wasn't a movie, they would have a magician or some live entertainment on stage, fire eaters and the such. Entrance fee didn't cost that much by today's standards, maybe 25 cents. There was a popcorn machine in the lobby, though. No concession stand that I can remember. you put your dime in and held your open bag underneath the stainless steel spout, and somehow the machine would dispense just the right amount before stopping with a few kernels dropping all alone onto the floor. As I was a joker and king of the groaners as a kid, no one ever stood my jokes, though, sometimes. For example, I asked my schoolmates, why was a popcorn just a kernel? Didn't they ever get promoted, or is a corporal allowed to shop in a general store? Well, now that I have it on paper and actually hear it in my own voice, I see why they gave me a funny look. Now let's get back to the movie house. I remember one day I managed to weasel the entrance fee from one of my family members to go across the street and see the movie. To my surprise, they had a magician on stage to perform before the double feature. He strutted out on the center stage and made a bold announcement. Before I start any show, I always warn anyone in the audience who might have a bad heart to please leave now. Well, this six-year-old kid wasn't sure, so I got up and left the theater and ran across to Grandma's house and met up with her in the kitchen and asked her if I had a bad heart. Puzzled, she says, why, no, Tommy, not getting the meaning of my question, you see. You have a good heart. I know of none better. Satisfied, I ran across the street to the movie house again, but I was refused entrance because I didn't have another 25 cents. I wonder what I missed that day, a Hopalong Cassidy or Red Rider. One night, the movie theater caught on fire. The owner shouted, everyone evacuate the building immediately, and I mean now. The manager wasn't a hero that night. No, he didn't save one child's life. He was last seen rolling the popcorn machine out the door to safety. That came first for him. Of course, the popcorn had kernels, and that gave them rank over above the kids, I probably have said as a joke as a child. The movie was never rebuilt. But since nothing went to waste in the South, the local kids used the slab floor as a roller rink. Sincerely, Tom.
This story reminds me of something from my youth. My Uncle Marv was a wonderful man. He just recently passed away, and he is missed. My favorite story that I love to tell about him is when, as a kid, we would visit him in Salem, Oregon. He owned a grocery store there and would take us to the store after hours, and to this day I'm not sure why. All I remember was that he would hand me a bag and point me at the candy aisle. As a kid, you have no idea what that meant to me. My mom would tell me to take it easy. I would reply, don't worry, Mom, I won't take it all, although I tried. That is that for that memory. Thank you, Tom, and we'll see you next time with part two of Growing Up Southern Living.
Do you like natural cheese, especially a mellow, rich-flavored cheddar? Well, then, here's news to make your mouth water. Kraft's experts now can give you a natural cheddar cheese with uniform fine flavor and texture, and made from pasteurized milk. It's called K-Brand Natural. That's K-A-Y Brand Natural. Just think of the mellow goodness of natural golden cheddar, but made from milk pasteurized as carefully as the milk your children drink.
Excuse me, but I don't quite understand. You mean all the milk in K-Brand cheese is pasteurized?
Absolutely. Every drop is wholesome, pasteurized milk. K-Brand is aged differently, too. Natural cheese ordinarily is cured in cheesecloth and forms a rind. But each big 10-pound bar of K-Brand has no rind because it ages in its own transparent wrapper. And it comes to your dealers with all its golden goodness still protected by this spick-and-span wrapper.
How do I buy K-Brand Natural?
Your dealer will cut as much as you wish. A portion, thick slices, or a wedge. You'll use it in sandwiches and on your cheese tray.
I'd better get enough. My family will love it for snacks, and with pie, too.
Tomorrow, folks, when you shop, look for the big golden bar with K-Brand Natural. K-Brand Natural down the top and sides. It's the wonderful new natural cheddar made from pasteurized milk.
That's all for this first show of the month of Spooky 2018. Coming up next week, Sylvia Schultz will be here to tell us some amazing ghost stories, and I will share three more of yours, including one from my brother Jim that should chill you just a bit. I want to thank our contributors this time, Melody Goodman, Joelle, George Garza, and Tom Williams. Thank you, guys. If you want to follow the podcast or the blog, it's easy to do. Head to ronsamazingstories.com. There you'll find all of the links you'll need. Please leave reviews and feedback about the show. It really does help us to grow. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.